This is the Valley Outdoors, and we are happy you guys are joining us today. Got a lot of cool stuff coming up today. We are going to talk about the five best towns for bass fishing, because why? Fishing open water's coming, and we are going to cover it for you. So hang tight. We're going to be here. I'm places elsewhere. Got the two crew in studio. Hang tight. It's going to be a great show.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Good morning, Don. Morning. Ava, how are you guys doing today?
We're here. Where are you?
Yeah, I am in beautiful Big Sky, Montana.
Oh, well, the studio is kind of empty today.
It is beautiful out here, believe it or not. It has been snowing the last couple, 3 days. We've got probably, I don't know, close to 10 inches to a foot of snow. And for what I'm doing, it's a good thing. I'm out here doing a big ski instructor event. It's called the National Academy. So pretty cool and an amazing location. I don't know if you've ever seen Big Sky. Ava or Don, have you ever seen it before?
No, I've never. I've never been there. Most of us are trying to figure out how to melt it right now, and you're out looking for it.
I'm looking for it for sure. I have to say, when we got here, the conditions were like somebody injected water into the snow because it got warm and then it froze, and everybody was praying for more snow, and boy, the snow gods helped out. The other funny part too is the base down here at the base of Big Sky, just outside of Bozeman, is the Gallatin River, where we talked about the train derailment that dumped all the beer. That's right here.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I had talked to somebody that was there when that, or in the aftermath. So it was pretty interesting, but a cool event. It's professional ski instructors put this on. People all over the country, in fact, all over the nation, are here. We've got people from Yugoslavia, people from Romania, Slovakia. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Aussies down in New Zealand and Australia too. So a lot of fun, a lot of high-end teaching and skiing going on. So yeah, week-long event and a couple days left to get back home before it's too late and start into the summer stuff. Speaking of summer stuff, Don.
Yeah.
What's going on with the water back home?
It's high and rising.
You know, guys,
I think they projected, though, to actually drop, in our area anyway, the projections, they dropped it by about a foot. But it's you know, for people locally here, it's over Bay Point Park already. So
so if you're not familiar if you're not familiar with the river situation, if you're planning on coming down to Red Wing to fish, don't plan on it. It's going to be, everything is closed. All the ramps are shut down, and it's not a good scenario right now. The water's in the parking lots and beyond. They're blocked off. Ramps are blocked off all through the whole the Lake Pepin all the way up into Hudson and beyond. And they've actually, I was checking last night, there's a significant number of tournaments that are normally this time of year down in this area, and they are all been canceled. They've all been put off.
Postponed
until,
or canceled, yeah.
Yeah, October, I believe, is roughly the time frame, and makes it difficult, you know. And the other thing, too, is you get the rain on top of the ice on the lakes, and it makes, if you thought you were going to go out and do some ice fishing, you can't do that either. It's not safe to do that unless you're able to push a boat out or do something similar. So it makes it difficult to do anything this time of year.
Yeah, and I was just talking with someone in north of the border, and the ice is getting dark, so they're not, you know, able to run out to their camps or get on the water anywhere right now. So they're being cautious, and they're getting more snow, I think, in the next few days. So
yeah, apparently they're supposed to get over a foot up there, and the northern part of the, I think it's up in through the Dakotas as well. So yeah, Mother Nature just does not want to let go. And you know, I have to say, the question comes in again: is are we going to have a lot of northern lakes open for the opener, Don?
I think so. Like I said, if Lake of the Woods up in on the Canadian border is getting dark already, that's 2 weeks from now they should be open.
Yeah, let's hope so. I know last year they had to postpone a lot of the things that were going on up there, and kind of a bummer, as they say. But well, what do you do? You know, we're going to talk about a story after we get done with this part of the show involving the Minnesota opener, which I want to get your feedback on, Don. It has to do with the governor and the opener. I was kind of a little baffled, but nonetheless, things can change. We're not going to go into it.
I know what you're talking about.
So that's one of those things that comes to play. And, you know, Don, when we're talking about a lot of the guys that were out fishing, the bite was pretty torrid on the river before the water came up. And I was very pleased to see the number of people that were throwing fish back, the big fish. It's almost a turnaround from past years, because you had so many people keeping these big fish. And I think things are starting to change a little bit for people. They're able to catch fish, photo it, and they're going to be able to get a mount for it if they want to put it on the wall and have those fish back in and swimming again, which is really pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's great conservation, because that's how we keep the fishery healthy, is to allow those big walleyes to spawn and reproduce.
Yeah, and from the past perspective, I remember I was going into a bait shop, and guy's got an 11.5, 12-pound fish. He wasn't sure, and he was bringing it in to get it weighed, and he had it on a rope stringer in the bottom of his boat, and he brought it in. Of course, it was past tense. It was no longer a walleye, and I said, "What are you going to do with it?" And he goes, "Well, I'm going to eat it." And I went,
Oh my goodness. Oh my!
Yeah. Not good. No. But I will say, if there's a place you want to go right now, the fishing is exceptional. Lake Erie. I've got several friends that are guiding out there, and people that have been out there, and the bite is on fire. Make a couple days. You know, if you want to fly out for a couple 3 days, charter a captain, go out, and you're going to have an absolute blast. Planning a day or two that may be wind days, but you know, look at the forecast, see what's going on, but definitely take a shot out there. Don, you fished Erie before, haven't you, Don?
I have, yes.
You know, and what a difference in growing season and the size of the fish. It's just an incredible, incredible fishery, and something I think everybody has to experience it. Because you can either go out, go jig fish, vertical jigging, go out with a bunch of guys, have a blast, and come back in, or you can go out and use a smaller boat, and you'll go out and troll some big, big fish. So tell you what, guys, let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll get into that and more when we come right back. Welcome back, everybody. And as always, I'd like to encourage you to check us out on Facebook. And where else, Don?
On thevalleyoutdoors.com.
You are correct. Absolutely. And, you know, Don, with the start of the fishing openers, I think each state has their own kind of official kickoff to the official fishing opener in their various ways they do it. Minnesota is probably one of the more celebrated of the walleye fishing openers, and they do a great job. They spend a lot of time and effort, the communities that get involved with it. I believe you were involved with it. One of the fishing openers in Red Wing a long time ago, right?
Well, not in Red Wing. Well, I was at the one in Red Wing, I think it was about 1998 or so, but in Fairmont in 1987, as co-host or chair of that event. back then. I've probably been to 20-plus Governor's Fishing Openers since 1986.
You know, I was involved in the one we were up at Grand Rapids with the governor, the governator.
Yep.
So, you know, and it in such a big part, a media event to really highlight what goes on with the resources and, of course, the walleye fishing throughout the state and the community. You spend a lot of time and effort making sure it's going to be a big kickoff. And the governor is a big part of that, having the governor there to really kind of highlight that media aspect of it. And big story in my mind, I think it's a big story, and it's an unfortunate one, and that's why I wanted to talk about it. Governor Tim Walz has announced that he will not attend the Governor's Fishing Opener Mankato this year. He'll be traveling to Montana State University that weekend to celebrate his daughter's graduation. The Governor's Opener event runs May 11th through the 13th, including live bands, kayaking, fishing demonstrations, all the other things that go along, and it's going to be near Waterville, out in prime location.
Madison Lake, I believe. That.
Yeah, Madison Lake. And so what's your thoughts on that, Don?
Well, I mean, first of all, the Governor's Fishing Opener back in 2020, you know, was canceled due to the pandemic. And so they've struggled to try to get the event, you know, geared back up to what it was the previous 25 or 50 plus years. And so I think this was their first year of a full out opener for the governor. So it's kind of sad that he's not going to be able to join. I understand that he would want to be at his daughter's graduation from college.
Here's my take on it. So if people don't know, the process to get a Minnesota Fishing Opener to your town is a lengthy one, correct, Don?
It is.
Process involves everybody in the community. You have to contact. It's donations. You're fundraising all year, moving boats. You're getting probably a prize boat that you're going to give away. That's usually what works. That's what happens. They sell raffle tickets. They do all the different things. Every element, people are donating time, people are donating business, whether it's contributing to the raffle at some point, there's a winning that you might contribute from your business. All of this goes on all year long, literally from the day after the opener, when it's announced that you or your community gets this, it's all year.
Oh,
it goes into this.
It's a huge, huge undertaking to do this. It takes 400 to 500 volunteers to pull one of these off.
Yeah, and so what it comes down to from my standpoint is when I look at this, I say, okay, if that was the case and he wasn't going to be there, my opinion would have been, okay, you let people know ahead of time that you're not going to be there. You know she's graduating a year ahead of time. Maybe a community doesn't want to participate because there's not going to be the governor there because you put all the effort in and thought it was going to be a big deal, and now it's not. That's why I think it's kind of it's going to be hard in the community because all of a sudden it's like this big story is not going to be there. That's my personal feeling of it, and I think it's disappointing that it wasn't announced way, way earlier. And, you know, granted, maybe I'm reading into it too much, but I'm not, I don't think. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Don?
Well, I mean, it's almost hurtful to the community. Now, maybe they've known this for a while. I don't know. I would hope they had because, like I said, they're trying to reinvigorate, I believe, the opener as it was in the past. I did read through the invitation that I received for this year's, and I noticed there's a lot of things that are still missing that we used to do. For example, the community gathering on Friday night, I don't believe that's happening. Mankato has taken a little bit of a different approach, it appears, where they've got a lot of entertainment in the evening. Starting Thursday night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, they've got live bands in the Madison Lake area. But keep in mind, all of, I would guess, the lodging is probably in Mankato, which is, you know, I don't know if it's 15 miles away or 20 miles away from Madison Lake. So it's going to have a different feel again this year. The last couple of years, I haven't gone to it.
No, we had gone the previous years.
Right.
I just, again, I think it's sad for the community. They have known that this is coming up. Either that or go to the Friday event, make the appearance, and then, you know, fly out on Saturday morning right after the kickoff and sending people out. You know, that's been a big thing. I think it's disappointing, and that's unfortunate.
Over the years, I've been to a lot of them. And some of the governors were fabulous about participating in the event. I remember when we hosted it in Fairmont back in 1987, the governor then, Rudy Perpich, literally flew in Saturday morning, fished for 4 hours, got on his airplane, left.
And nobody
knew about it.
You know? I don't see any reason why we couldn't do that this time.
Right.
And again, that's just me, and I don't want to be a naysayer, but I think it's a disappointment to the state and to the cities that put all the time and effort into it. So
right.
Kind of a bummer. On to the positive real quick story here. Approximately $140 million are going to be available for wildlife habitat projects. That's through the Don, you're familiar with the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council.
Yes.
And the money that brings in. And about $140 million available for that. And you're actually going to be able to look at statewide grants for both the metro and statewide to aid Minnesota habitat restoration, protection, and enhancement. Requests are due to the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council by May 26. So if you do have something that's looking to be looking for a grant or something similar, you can get that out to them prior to May 26, and you'll be getting approved and signed into law during the 2024 legislative session, which starts July 1st. And since 2008, they've had $1.5 billion put on the ground for habitat programs. That's impressive. I mean, don't you think?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's affected more than 1.3 million acres of forest prairies, and proposal requirements in terms of funding are outlined in the call for funding request. To view details, you can see it on one of the sites are .gov, Minnesota.gov. We can provide that so you guys can click on the Valley Outdoors and check that out. And, yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. When you look at the money that goes into that and the funding and where it comes from and where it goes, Well, tell you what, guys, we are going to come back and we are going to highlight the five best towns for bass fishing in the United States. I know, Don, you're going to be waiting for that. I know that.
Okay.
All right, hang tight. We'll be right back, Gore Valley Outdoors.
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Welcome back, Don. I couldn't find a catfish story.
Thank you.
So I...
You know, that's something I think I might try to do this year is to learn how to catch catfish intentionally. Not like you do, but intentionally.
You're breaking up right there. What?
Yeah.
Like I do what? Well, we highlighted it a little bit. We teased it. The best five towns for bass, and there's a reason that I'm doing this story. There's a little disappointment from myself personally in this, so I was kind of bummed out. But I fished several of these lakes, and you'll understand where I'm coming from in this.
Well, I think I know what you're talking about too. I think there's a pretty major lake missing here.
Yeah, I think so too. So number one, and this is when they're talking about the big bags, trying to catch a 10-pound plus.
Yeah, you're looking for a big bass. Trophy here.
The big dogs, exactly. Yep. And Okeechobee, Florida, I have fished that, and Scott Martin was kind enough to have a stay at his place down there on Lake Okeechobee. Actually, it's Roland Martin's, his dad, but surface area is 730 square miles, an amazing amount of fishing. But it's really strange, Don. The lake is not deep. I think the overall average depth is like 7 feet deep.
Oh, is that right?
And the problem is that when the wind blows, that lake gets very nasty and it can be very, very dangerous. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And it's really pretty spooky. So a lot of fun places around there. You get little ponds that are community ponds that drain into Okeechobee. And we actually, one of the FLW tournaments way back when, we were doing some marketing things down there, got to fish in some of those ponds, and I actually caught one that was about 10.5 pounds largemouth, and it was a rush. It was
it was
super cool. So number one, Lake Okeechobee. Number two, Guntersville, Alabama. Lake Guntersville, 69,000 acre lake, famed bass fishing, and it's in Alabama, right along the Tennessee River. Huge body of water. It's one of the considered one of the best bass fishing destinations in the South. There's a lot of hydrilla, milfoil, and a lot of steep ledges in that particular area. And I think there's one of the tournaments up there that two guys were fishing literally on the same spot and had just giant bags. And they got in a little controversy, but nonetheless, it was one of those where you can catch so many big bass there. It's incredible, especially with the cover. I mean, it really comes to habitat, and they really have it there. Clayton, New York, which is one that really didn't stand out in my mind. It was surprising, but of course it is a smallmouth location. It's crazy. And the St. Lawrence River is it's the only river that's part of this is the St. Lawrence River. It's legendary, and pretty crazy amount of fish are in there, especially the smallmouth. It flows into the Atlantic and from Ontario, and it really provides an amazing amount of bait fish, which is one of the big things that really helps with that. Spawn takes place in early summer along a lot of the island points and mainland shorelines. And, yeah, pretty impressive place. Dayton, Tennessee, Lake Chickamauga, and that's been known as well. A lot of big tournaments go there. 59-mile-long lake is, they call it Land of the Giants. And there's a ton of giant fish that come out of there. And electrofishing survey, so big fish are becoming more common, and they're growing quickly, and pretty amazing. They call it the bass fishing capital of the South, and that's in Lake Chickamauga. And Quitman, Texas. Texas has a ton of big fish, big bass lakes down. I mean, I think we've talked about that. A lot of the fish down there, just giants. Obviously, with the growing season being longer, and this particular lake, they've got restrictive harvest regulations, and they've done a lot of stocking of a Florida strain of largemouth, which is kind of interesting. It really makes for a jumbo type bass. 65% of that state's 50 biggest bass were caught on that particular Lake Fork lake, and 18.8 pounds is the record. And if you're serious about a trophy fish, you want to try that in spring before the spawn, which is, it's a pretty cool deal. And the part that's kind of funny is the population of the town right there is 2,000 people. So.
Wow. That state record is pretty impressive.
It is. And you know what? I'm going to put number six on the list. We only have five, but I'm going to put number six on the list. I'm going to put Mille Lacs out there.
Yeah.
Mille Lacs, once they've had a couple tournaments, in fact, they went back-to-back years at the BASS, the size of the smallmouth that are coming out of that lake are nothing less than legend. And the fishing that these pros experienced when they were there was absolutely incredible. And they basically have said, the pros are saying, this is the most incredible fishery we've ever been to. And how that came up. And again, the target was, it's not the best bass fishing. It's the ones that you're going to get the giant giants. And largemouth grow bigger than the smallmouth do, so you're going to have to target those bigger fish on those other lakes. But don't give up on Mille Lacs. Mille Lacs is a nation's top spot for that kind of fishing. So, speaking of fishing, Don, they just came out with the regulations on Red Lake. I know there's been a lot of controversy up in Red, and we don't need to jump into all that. But taking on the positive side, they're going to allow 5 walleye limit on Upper Red this season. And kind of nice. It's only one walleye will be allowed over 17 inches, and that'll be starting on the May 13th. This summer is going to be a generally a much bigger bag limit than they've had in the past. The fishing, a minimum fish, is going to be 15 inches, as always, across the state. There used to be a four walleye possession with only one walleye longer than 20 inches allowed. And so now they're changing up a little bit, but having five walleyes and changing that slot size limit a bit is a big help. They're under what is called the Minnesota DNR and Red Lake Nation under a joint harvest plan that the Red Lakes Fisheries Technical Committee revised in 2015, and the winter harvest regulation is determined after the summer fishing season and the completion of the fall assessment. So they're looking at, they'll modify it, which is good, and they're really keeping tight tabs on what's going on with it between the harvest, the netting harvest, and of course the hook and line type harvest from the regular anglers out there. So they're going to be keeping tabs on it, and it's good to see that they're expanding it. And so a lot of good stuff happening up in Red Lake. That's pretty cool. Nice to hear. Real quick, Don, quick story. Research is just done on the blood from deer is killing bacteria that causes Lyme disease, which it blew me away. And we'll find more out about it. But what it says is that the actual blood from deer kills the bacteria. But what's happening is they're not transmitting the actual disease through the deer, but it's actually used as a transference point. And I'm really surprised. And they're going to do a lot of research and see what it is in the blood of the deer that does kill that Lyme's disease. And hopefully it does help many that are afflicted with that issue. It's kind of a sad thing to hear all that when it comes to somebody has Lyme's disease. So tell you what, guys, we are happy to have you guys join us this week. We got to run. It goes so quick. Join us next week. We are the Valley Outdoors for Don, Abe, and myself, Eric. We are out of here. Have a great week.